Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Thank you for tuning in, and welcome back. Today we're going to continue in our series of shows about famous scientists, their lives, and their contributions. And today's show is all about Edwin Hubble, the man after whom the space telescope is named. As usual, we have some great images for you to watch while you're listening to the audio track. So while you're listening to the audio, open a second window and look at the images that are on my website at guidetothecosmos.com. Click on the radio microphone icon, go to the radio menu, and pull up today's show, Edwin Hubble. So image number one on the website shows an image of our hero of today's show. Hubble had a simple enough beginning. He was born in 1889, the son of an insurance salesman, in the city of Marshfield, Missouri. The family moved in 1898 to Wheaton, Illinois. And there Hubble started to excel, but athletics rather than science. He did well enough in school in almost all of the subjects, except for spelling. But athletically, he was a star. In a single high school track meet in 1906, he finished first in seven events and placed third in an eighth one. And that same year, he set the high school high jump record for the state of Illinois. After graduation, he went to the University of Chicago, where he studied mathematics, astronomy, and philosophy, and he got his Bachelor of Science degree in 1910. Then Hubble became one of the first Rhodes Scholars, and he went to Oxford University in England to spend 3 years studying law, and then switching to Spanish and getting a master's degree in Spanish. While he was in England, some say he started to acquire British mannerisms and their habit of dress, and that seemed to stay with him for the rest of his life, which many of his American colleagues found irritating. When he returned to the United States, Hubble taught Spanish and physics and mathematics at New Albany High School in New Albany, Indiana, and he also coached the boys' basketball team. Hubble eventually became a member of the Kentucky State Bar Association, but he never actually practiced law in the state of Kentucky. During the First World War, Hubble served in the U.S. Army, and he was quickly moved up the ranks to major. At the end of the war, he took a position in astronomy at the Yerkes Observatory at the University of Chicago, where he received his Ph.D. in 1917. The world had gained a great astronomer and lost an attorney. Is anybody out there weeping? His Ph.D. dissertation was titled Photographic Investigations of Faint Nebula, a topic that would eventually make him world famous. In 1919, the famous astronomer George Ellery Hale, who was the founder of the Mount Wilson Observatory near Pasadena, hired Hubble just as they were completing the construction of the world's largest telescope, the 100-inch diameter Hooker Telescope. Now, at this time, the prevailing view of the cosmos was that the Milky Way was the entire universe, that there wasn't anything beyond what we could see in the Milky Way. Hubble set to work using this great new Hooker telescope, and he found Cepheid variable stars in some of these faint nebula that he talked about in his thesis. Now, if you recall from our show on Henrietta Leavitt, she had discovered a special relationship that allowed people to measure the distance to far-off objects by finding Cepheid variable stars. So Hubble, using Henrietta Leavitt's relationship between the intensity and the period of Cepheid variable stars, started to make observations of Cepheids in these very distant nebula. And he was able to prove conclusively that these nebula were far too distant to be part of the Milky Way. And in fact, they were entire galaxies of their own, and not just fuzzy collections of stars. And indeed, these galaxies were as large as the Milky Way in some cases, and were located completely beyond the limits of our galaxy. Hubble's idea was fiercely opposed by many in the astronomy establishment of the time, and in particular by Harlow Shapley of the Harvard University. Hubble announced his discovery on January 1st, 1925, and overnight the universe became about a million times larger, and our view of the cosmos has never been the same. Hubble also set to work classifying these galaxies and grouping them according to their appearance on photographic images and according to what he considered to be a development sequence of galaxies. And he arranged these galaxies in groups that have forever since been known as the Hubble sequence. But perhaps the most important thing that Hubble discovered was the relationship between the distance to these galaxies and the velocity that they were moving at. Now let's discuss how Hubble revolutionized our concept of the cosmos for a second time by correlating distance and velocity for these very distant objects. Hubble measured the velocity along our line of sight, the so-called radial velocity, by measuring the shift in the color of light from these distant objects. Light from an object that is moving away from us is shifted toward the red end of the spectrum, so we call this a red shift, and light from an object that is moving toward us is shifted toward the blue edge of the spectrum, which is called the blue shift. The amount of the shift tells us the magnitude of the velocity. So Hubble made a plot that's shown on the second image on the website that I'll describe for all of you who aren't able to look at the images while you're listening to the audio track. He measured the red shift and therefore the velocity that galaxies were moving away from us. And this velocity is plotted across the horizontal axis. This means that things that are moving faster will be further to the right. Things that are moving slower will be further to the left on the chart. On the vertical axis, he plotted the distance, which he was able to calculate using Henrietta Leavitt's relationship for Cepheid variable stars. So stars that were further away will appear at the top of the chart, and stars that are closer will appear near the bottom of the chart. So we plot the velocity along the horizontal axis and the distance along the vertical axis, and where those two lines cross is where we're going to put a black dot indicating this galaxy is at that distance moving at that velocity. Now, if you think for just a moment about only those galaxies that are a certain distance away, let's say that they are 1 billion light years away. So imagine that there's a giant shell, a giant sphere around the Earth, centered on the Earth. The radius of that sphere is 1 billion light years. So we're only thinking about galaxies that just happen to lie on the edge of that sphere, surrounding the Earth. There could be a lot of them. And they could be moving in all sorts of different directions. I mean, after all, why not? Some could be moving toward us, some could be moving away from us, some could be moving to the left, some to the right, and so on. So we might expect that if we made Hubble's plot, all the galaxies would be at the same distance, because that's how we started this, so they'd all be on the same horizontal line, the same distance up from the bottom of the graph, but they could be at all sorts of different positions from left to right, corresponding to their different velocities. And this is shown in image number 3 on the website. But indeed, this isn't what Hubble discovered at all. The universe could very well have been that way, but it isn't. What Hubble has discovered, and what all astronomers since then have confirmed, is that all the galaxies that are at a given distance, say 1 billion light years, are all moving away from the Earth with exactly the same velocity. In this case, they're all moving away at 50 million miles per hour. And this is shown on image number 4 on the website. Now again, the universe didn't have to be this way. The galaxies could have been moving in all sorts of directions, but in fact, they are not. All the galaxies at a certain distance are moving away from us with exactly the same velocity. So the ones on the left are moving away from us toward the left, the ones on the right are moving away from us toward the right, but they're both moving with the same velocity. Truly a remarkable discovery. And furthermore, Hubble discovered that galaxies that are twice as far away would be moving twice as fast. So if they were 2 billion light years away, they would be moving twice as fast. That would be 100 million miles an hour. And if they were 10 times closer, they'd be moving at 1/10 of the velocity. That would be 5 million miles an hour. So there is a linear relationship between distance and velocity. And this relationship is called Hubble's Law. Why not? And it simply says that the velocity that a galaxy is moving away from us is equal to some constant, which we call the Hubble constant, times its distance. Velocity is equal to a constant times the distance. Velocity is linearly proportional to distance. And this is shown on image number 5 on the website. Now, Hubble's law, that the velocity is linearly proportional to the distance, tells us immediately something dramatic and important about our universe. And we can understand that with a back-to-home example, which is shown on image number 6 on the website. Imagine that we were sitting on the top of the Space Needle in Seattle with a good telescope, looking out over the freeways, looking at cars, leaving the city for the weekend, driving off into the country. And just for fun, imagine that we discovered that all the cars on the freeway are obeying Hubble's law. And that is that their velocity is proportional to their distance. So in this case, we might have a minivan that's 50 miles away from the Space Needle, moving at 25 miles an hour, and a sports car that's 100 miles away from the Space Needle, moving 50 miles an hour. So in one case, it's 50 miles away, moving 25 miles an hour, and the other case, 100 miles away, moving 50 miles an hour. That's the direct proportional relationship. The sports car is twice as far away, moving twice as fast. There might be another high-speed car 3 times further away, moving 3 times faster, but that guy's going to get a ticket. Now, what is all this about? Well, imagine that we had taken a video camera image of all these cars on the freeway from the beginning of the weekend drive until the current moment. Now imagine that we take that video camera image and we run the tape backwards so that we're seeing cars moving backwards on the freeway coming closer and closer to the center of town, which we've decided to take as the Space Needle. Well, the minivan is 50 miles away, moving 25 miles an hour, so 2 hours ago, it would have been at the base of the Space Needle in the parking lot there. And the sports car, which is 100 miles away, moving 50 miles an hour, would also have been in the parking lot of the Space Needle the same 2 hours ago. And in fact, if every car on the freeway is obeying Hubble's law, then every single vehicle on the road would be in the parking lot of the Space Needle at the same moment in time, in this case 2 hours ago, and that tells us that if all the galaxies in the universe are obeying Hubble's law, that at some time in the distant past, they were all in one place at one time, and that time is what we call the Big Bang. You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos, and I am your host, Robert Piccioni. We'll be right back after these messages.
Explore Dr. Piccioni's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts that are available to you, our radio audience. Robert's first book, Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, makes the exciting discoveries of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology understandable for everyone. And it was just selected as the best science book of the year by National Best Books. As Robert says, you don't have to be a great musician to appreciate great music, and the same is true for science. If you can change money, you can understand Einstein. Robert's second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident?, describes how precisely tuned the universe is to support life, and shows how amazingly improbable that is. Go to Robert's website and send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. That's guidetothecosmos.com.
We're back talking about Edwin Hubble, the great scientist after whom the Space Telescope is named. Now, one might well ask, how do all these galaxies know what velocity they're supposed to have? I mean, who calls them up and says, well, you ought to be going to the left at 50 million miles an hour, and you ought to be going to the right at 100 million miles an hour? I mean, how does that work? Well, of course, that's not what happens. The most direct, the most simple, and the most comprehensive answer to this question is that the galaxies, in fact, really aren't moving. What's happening is that space is expanding. And as the space expands, it carries the galaxies with them. So let's take another example here. So take a look at image number 7 on the website, which I will now describe for those of you that can't see the image. Imagine that we have a piece of tape with dimes attached to it at equal intervals. If the tape isn't being stretched, then imagine that the dimes are very close to each other, as illustrated in the bottom of the image. Now, as we move up the image, we're stretching the tape more and more. And as the tape stretches, the dimes, of course, will move away from each other. Dimes that are twice as far away will move apart twice as fast simply because there's twice as much tape between them being stretched. So now imagine that each dime is actually a galaxy. An astronomer on any of the dimes, any of the galaxies, will see all the other dimes, all the other galaxies, moving away from them. And it doesn't matter which galaxy they're in, all the other galaxies will be seeming to move directly away from them because the tape is being stretched out from any point that you happen to pick on the tape. And this astronomer will also notice that galaxies that are, let's say, three times further away will be moving away from him three times faster, because there's three times more tape, three times more space that's being stretched. So no matter where the astronomer is, no matter which dime he's sitting on, no matter which galaxy he's looking from, he will see the universe around him expanding in accordance with Hubble's law. Everything will be moving away from him at a velocity proportional to its distance. So this stretching of space automatically ensures that everything will be moving with Hubble's law, as indeed we observe that the galaxies in our universe are. So this is what is happening in our universe, except not in one dimension, as my tape example showed, but in three dimensions at the same time. All three of our spatial dimensions, up, down, left, right, forward, and backward, all three dimensions are stretching at the same time, and they're stretching at the same rate. And we know this because we use the same general approach that Hubble used in the 1920s. Nowadays, we use something different than Seyfert variables. We use what are called type 1a supernova. These are much brighter than Seyfert's, and so we can see them much further away, but it's the same idea. The color of the light tells us how fast the type 1a supernova is moving away from us, and the intensity of the light tells us how far away that supernova is. So we plot the distance on the vertical axis and the velocity on the horizontal axis, and once again, we replicate Hubble's law. All the supernova that we see in the sky, all the type 1a supernova, are moving away from us with a velocity that's linearly proportional to their distance. They're obeying Hubble's law. And we see this regardless of where that supernova happens to lie in the sky. So some of them are to the left, to the right, up and down, and so forth, all across the sky. And regardless of the direction in the sky, we observe that they are all moving away from us with a velocity that's proportional to their distance. And again, this simple fact tells us that they must all have been in one place at one moment in the very distant past. That's actually 13.7 billion years ago, if you do the math, and that's the moment we call the Big Bang. So Hubble's discoveries not only told us that the Milky Way isn't all that there is, in fact, there are billions and billions of other galaxies vastly further than the edge of the Milky Way. But Hubble's discoveries also told us that the universe is expanding. The universe is not, as it was in the past and as it will be in the future, the same as it is today. The universe is changing. It's dynamic. It's getting larger and larger as time progresses. And in the past, it was smaller and smaller. And at one moment in the distant past, it was essentially a single point. Now, with the very best data that we have today, which just happens to come from the Hubble Space Telescope, we can even measure the expansion rate at different moments in the past. So we can measure whether this 50 million miles per hour per billion light years has always been the same velocity, whether this proportionality constant has been the same since the beginning of time or has changed. And indeed, we discover that the universe is even more dynamic than simply a direct expansion. And this is shown in image number 8 on the website. Here we examine the expansion rate of the universe at different times during its evolution. So on the vertical axis, we plot the expansion rate. The faster the universe is expanding, the closer that we will plot it toward the top. If it's expanding slowly, it'll be more toward the bottom. On the horizontal axis, we are plotting the distance to the supernova that we're measuring the expansion rate at. And as we have discussed before, when we look out at great distances, we are also looking back in time, because distance and time are connected by the fact that we are observing objects with light, and light is moving through space with a certain velocity, a very high velocity, but nonetheless a finite velocity. So when we are looking at an object 1 billion light years away, we are seeing what the universe was like 1 billion years ago. And on this chart, we are seeing over 10 billion years back into the past, near the beginning of the Big Bang, which was 13.7 billion years ago. And the beginning is toward the right side of the chart. And today, 13 billion years after the Big Bang, is all the way toward the left end of the chart. So objects that are further away and reflect the universe at early times are on the right, and objects that are closer and reflect the state of the universe in more recent times are on the left. And what we see here is that it appears that in the very distant past, the expansion rate was actually more than it is today. So the universe seemed to be slowing down in its expansion as the universe got older and older. And that expansion rate kept decreasing until about 6 billion years ago. And this actually makes a lot of sense. If you take a ball and throw it up into the air, gravity will slow the ball down. If you throw it really fast, gravity can't stop the ball. That is, if you throw it faster than the escape velocity. But in any case, gravity will slow the ball down somewhat. So the galaxies, which are all shooting out from the Big Bang, should be slowed down by their mutual gravity. They're all pulling on each other. They're all pulling back toward the center. And so the velocity of this expansion should be decreasing over time. That makes sense. So it made sense to see the data on the right portion of this image number 8, showing that the expansion rate is decreasing gradually over time as we move closer to today on the left side of the image. But then about 6 billion years ago, something different, something really new and strange happened to the universe. The expansion rate stopped slowing down, turned around, and started speeding up again. Speeding up. Things are moving away faster and faster. The expansion rate is accelerating. That doesn't make any sense at all in terms of the old physics. After all, gravity should be slowing everything down. Aha! There must be something new in the universe that we have just discovered. Something that's pushing the universe apart. Some form of negative gravity that had never been seen before. This was one of the most startling discoveries of the 20th century. We still don't exactly understand why, but that doesn't stop us from giving it a name. It's called dark energy. And in some future show, we'll talk about the mystery of dark energy. After making his discoveries, Hubble continued working at the Mount Wilson Observatory, taking time off in World War II to serve again in the U.S. Army, and this time receiving the Legion of Merit Award. Shortly before he passed away, the Mount Palomar Observatory, with its giant 200-inch telescope, had just been completed, and Hubble became its first astronomer. He continued his work at the Wilson Observatory and the Palomar Observatory until 1953, when he died of a cerebral thrombosis. Throughout much of his life, Hubble had lobbied the scientific establishment to allow astronomers to participate in the Nobel Prize in Physics. Before that, physicists didn't really think of astronomers as being part of their community, because before then, astronomy really wasn't a quantitative science. It was more about looking at the stars and cataloging. Well, Hubble had really changed that. Hubble had made astronomy a quantitative science, and he pushed for the Nobel Prize Committee to consider the contribution of astronomers in deciding who had made the greatest contribution to physics each year. And indeed, just before his death, the Nobel Prize Committee had decided to award the 1953 Nobel Prize to Edwin Hubble for his dramatic discoveries about our universe. Unfortunately, he died before the official announcement, and the prize went to someone else, because according to the terms of the will of Alfred Nobel, the Nobel Prize cannot be awarded posthumously. Well, thank you for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed the story of Edwin Hubble, one of the great scientists of the 20th century. And remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.